Are we on TV?
But what I would argue is to make it similar language.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. The Education Committee will come to order. And we have some updated information to share with you. As you remember, yesterday at this time, or not quite at this time, but we had gone through the proposed draft, and after the meeting was completed yesterday about 11, we got information from the Department of Education that the way that we were dealing with the cuts, the federal stimulus money, which was to offset cuts, did not comply with new guidelines that they received from the federal government, U.S. Department of Education, yesterday morning. Yes. And these are issued as guidance on the state fiscal stabilization fund program. So what I'd like to do this morning is to have our Senate staff go through the little bit of the scenario of what they were dealing with, and then we have an amendment, the A25 amendment, which is meant to address the changes that need to be made that will help this proposal and conform to those federal guidelines. So, Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair and members, good morning. You will find, I believe, in front of you two revisions to documents that we worked off of yesterday. We have an A revised and a C revised. And a quick look shows that very little has changed, except it's actually somewhat substantial. I will call members' attention on the A revised to the perhaps it makes more sense for me to actually back up and give some context, and then we can go through the actual numbers. Senator Stumpf referenced this document. This document that he referenced was issued by the U.S. Department of Education yesterday morning as we were beginning our run-through of the bill. And essentially what that document tells us is that when reductions to education are made by states, and many states are doing similar endeavors, there is a pecking order in which dollars have to be restored. First, you have to restore dollars to the level of FY09 with available federal funds. There are no cuts to 09 in this recommendation, so that's not an issue. Then you have to go to fiscal 10 and restore that level of funding. And then to the extent that funds are available, if reductions for 11 are required, you fill up that pot. In Minnesota, we tend to think about things in biennium, and we were interpreting initially the language of the bill prior to this recommendation or this guidance coming out as allowing us to make even cuts so that the distributions was even over 2 years. This guidance tells us that that kind of structure is should not be done. And so logically what you would then do is make larger cuts in fiscal 10 to the general fund and replace it with all federal aid and then have lower cuts in 11 and you'd be signed, sealed, and delivered and everything would be fine. Except under the federal law, there is a maintenance of effort. And in each of fiscal 10 and 11, you cannot reduce your education aids for the total education bill below the level of FY06. So if we go down to the level of effort, then that's the O, you know, we make reductions down to the 06 level. That's not enough. It's essentially not enough. I mean, we begin piercing that maintenance of effort problem, and if we go down as low as we can go and then replace it with federal dollars, the distributions between years looks fairly uneven. It's about a negative $30 per pupil in 10 once you add the federal money back, and a negative 515 or so in fiscal 11. So we considered that a problem, and we spent a good portion of yesterday trying to figure out how to deal with that. And buried inside this document that I referenced earlier is the following language. And permit me to read it just so that everyone is clear what we're talking about. After a state determines the restoration amounts, that's what we're talking about, the federal add-back totals, i.e. a state calculates the amount of education stabilization funds that it will provide to local education agencies, school districts, and charters. The governor may release funds to school districts in phases in order to avoid a funding cliff. For example, a governor is not required to release in FY09 all of the education stabilization funds to districts and are entitled to receive on the basis of the FY09 restoration calculations. In working with the Department of Education, what we have determined is appropriate is to appropriate the dollars in fiscal 10, the federal dollars in fiscal 10, and then carry language in the bill that mandates that the governor sequence that money so that it will be sequenced over, part of it will be sequenced in fiscal 10 and part of it will be sequenced in fiscal 11. And what that does is balance the effect to districts out back to essentially where we were in the starting point. And I'll pause there and see if there are questions about what I've just described. I realize it's somewhat technical.
Mr. Chair, just a comment.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman, that is pretty darn good work that you found that little sentence in there and were able to work that through. Oh. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I would love to claim credit for it, but it was Dr. Melcher, as usual, that found that sentence for us.
Mr. Nauman? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe you're going to explain it, but it seemed like what we were talking about yesterday was essentially what you just described. What is different? I mean, we talked about yesterday about appropriating all the money into this account and then metering it out in some way through some kind of grant structure, I guess. We weren't quite clear on that. But and you just described appropriating all the money and then so how is the is it just the mechanism that is different or is there dollars that are different?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, I recognize that there's a little bit of confusion here. I don't know if in your packet you still have yesterday's spreadsheet. And it might be worth pulling out and making a comparison on lines lines 19 and lines 223 for comparative purposes. I hope the lines are still the same on today's. Actually, they're not. So on today's spreadsheet, it's line 20 and lines 224. If you compare those two lines, Senator Hand, you'll notice that what we were doing yesterday was we were drawing down education aids in equal amounts, roughly $484 million in 10 and 11. And then we were, in equal amounts, restoring them $259.8 in each year. So what we're now interpreting as the guidance from the federal government is that the law dictates that we fill up the pot as quickly as possible with the federal funds. And so essentially what we're doing is trying to get a larger cut into 10. And in today's spreadsheet on line 20, you'll know that the reduction is now 544 and then 424.3. That 544 is about as low as you can go and still meet the maintenance of effort. We've got about $2.6 million of extra room. So it's very tight and still meet the look back to fiscal 06. And as I mentioned, what we then do is add language, and it'll be in the A25 amendment, that requires the governor to phase that money or part of that money from fiscal 10 into the second year of the biennium. So that's how it's a little bit different. But you're not wrong in questioning, aren't we basically at the same place? And the answer is yes, but for a whole variety of technical reasons, it's a touch more complicated than we thought it was yesterday when we first did it. The good news is we feel a lot more confident about where we are.
Senator Hand.
You yesterday distributed and I recognize you cautioned us about the exactness of this, I guess it was the F.
Yes.
Does that change substantially in this new structure, or is that still a reasonably good document?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand.
Mr. Mellon.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, I think what I would say about that, let there be light. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, there is no difference between what we saw yesterday and today vis-a-vis what we're talking about now. We're talking about the Fiscal Stabilization Fund, and these are dollars that are sent specifically to hold education as harmless as possible in the states. And the dollars that we distributed, or the data run that we distributed from the Congressional Research Service, are formulaic dollars that go on the Title I and special ed funds, formulas rather. Now, there's one other piece that I will mention, if I can call members' attention to the revision C. This is the data run by a school district. I can locate my own copy.
There you go.
Members will recall that the way that the dollars were distributed was that we used the current year ADMs as a proxy for creating a distribution, so the dollars come out evenly per pupil out of each district. And the net after the federal dollars is $273 per pupil in fiscal year 10. Members will note, if you look on the far right-hand column, that the dollars are no longer quite as even. And if you look at the next column that has the $200 million up at the top, it's because of that column. This is the $200 million that is moved from fiscal 10 to fiscal 11. And we felt to conform with the guidance from the federal government that it was important to use for the federal money that was getting phased from fiscal year 10 to 11, that we use the fiscal year 10 pupil distribution as a proxy for distributing those dollars. So the state cut in fiscal 11 remains even. It's based on 11 pupils. And the federal add-back of $200 million is based on the 10 pupils. So the net has not a diseven distribution, but it's not as rock-solid same dollar amount as it was yesterday. Is that clear? And then finally, I'll mention one point. The state cut and the federal add-back that I described that we've been talking about up to this point no longer tie directly to the data run, and that's because, well, I should say that the state cut does. You see the 544003 and the 424385. Those are the same numbers that show up on the spreadsheet. The difference is in the federal funds, and that's the phasing. So while we appropriate $519.6 million of federal funds in fiscal 10, we are phasing $200 million of it into the second year of the biennium. So that's why the federal dollars are actually split between 2 years on the data run. So, Mr. Chairman, that was, unless there are questions about what I've described, that's all that I had.
Okay. I think we'll hand out the amendment that does what you've just explained. And Dr. Melcher, if you would just, if you have anything that you'd want to add to it or, okay. Thank you for all the work that you did yesterday in helping us get through this.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I will just walk through the amendment.
Why don't we just wait just a second here?
There's none. It covers the amendment.
The amendment gets handed out. All right.
So, Mr. Chairman, on lines 1.3 through 1.7 of the amendment, we are making changes to the permanent law that sets the amount of the ADM adjustment. So these numbers will correspond directly to the spreadsheet. So there are some changes of dollars, and even in the tails, those were adjusted. While that's not affected by the federal language, we wanted to smooth it out a little in light of what was happening, and so those numbers are adjusted as well. Then we replace, we delete sections 45 and 47 and insert a new section 46 to restore. This is the restoring state support for general education. And this is where the language that phases the dollars. So members will note that paragraph A actually allocates the money of 519.6, that corresponds to the spreadsheet, to fiscal year 2010. And then in paragraph B, we give the governor instruction to release 319.6 of those dollars into fiscal 10, and the governor shall release 200 million of that into fiscal 11. That accomplishes the phasing. Then in paragraph C, to give the department some appropriate direction on how to calculate the federal money for fiscal year 2011, we tell the department that it should be, that the calculation should be made on the ADMs for fiscal year 2010. Lines 1.26 through 1.30 adjust the general education appropriations. Lines 1.31 through the subsequent page add some language to the QCOMP provisions described earlier, gives the Finance Department and the Department of Education instruction to continue forecasting the alternative QCOMP, alternative compensation program, as a forecasted program, but then sets a date at which, if there's aid, after which that aid can be certified to be made grants, and provides that the department can make a reasonable estimate to ensure that the QCOMP state aid is fully funded. Reason for that is there was the Department of Finance approached us and expressed some concern about a forecasted program then converting to a grant program, and was fear that that might be piercing some of the budget rules under which we're operating, and we believe that this addresses that issue. And then finally, Mr. Chairman and members, on line 2.3, we add some language to the rider appropriation for the statewide testing that corresponds to some concerns that were brought to the chair related to the elimination of the hand scoring.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nowen. Now, obviously, I think we have some more technical amendments, but this probably doesn't solve all of our problems yet. So, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just out of curiosity, and maybe you know, if not, we'll try to find out. But the $200 million that we appropriate in 2010, but don't spend until 2011. How is that carried on the budget? Is that in reserve, or is it carried as a? What's the mechanism that you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, we discussed yesterday that the creation of the statewide the fiscal stabilization account and the federal fund, those dollars will come through the federal government, and based on the language that. Right. As of this point, we're carrying in every budget bill. Those dollars will be credited to that account. So what I would envision would occur under this language is that it would the governor would phase that money over the subsequent fiscal year. And there's a metering process, and the department could, at its discretion, elect to spend those dollars early in the fiscal year or later in the fiscal year. It's up to the it's up to their discretion how they do that. There's cash flow issues associated with that.
All right. Any other questions on the A23 amendment, Senator Wieger?
I would so move. A25. I would so move.
Senator Wieger moves the A25 amendment. Any comment on it? Or if not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted. Do we have any other questions? We have the A17 amendment. Members, this amendment is a result of a number of things. We had some meetings with the department as well as some clarification issues on some of the segments of our bill. So we'll have Dr. McQuay go through that and point that out.
Mr. Chair and members, it looks like almost everybody has the A17 now. These are deal with a variety of programs that were brought forward from the department. On page 35, line 15, after developed, insert, or approved, this has to do with the online learning programs that are in the virtual education program that the governor recommended. And the department wanted to make clear that they can approve programs as well as develop them in the case of districts having their own programs already, and the program then is meant to share. On this striking D and inserting E, that's purely a technical fix. And then on in paragraph F here on 1.6 of the amendment, this has to do with placing a charter school or placing a score of the MCA2 or grad on the high school transcript. And the department thought that it was best to have the highest score be represented on the transcript, and so this language just clarifies that to make sure that of the tests, each test that the student takes, the highest score is reported on the transcript. And then lines 12, 13, and 14 deal with the mathematics assessment. There was a provision allowing the department to field test, and this was changed to prepare preliminary and administrations. This would mean that the department can go out and to districts and have them take the test without having it be high stakes yet.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Before we get too far into it, you said the technical changing D to E. Was there some other change in that provision? Because then it's skipping a D. There's no D in the section. It goes from A, B, C to E.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, as I was studying the testing language, it was a wrong cross-reference from I don't know how many years ago, and so the reference that this paragraph was referencing to D really should be referencing an E paragraph. So it's purely technical. It has nothing
to
do with
the lead one.
No.
Oh, thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, on line 15, changing September to November helps the department better align the QComp application deadlines to the start date. Another place in law, there is an October 1st deadline for districts to start their QComp program, and having a September deadline is kind of in the mix of that starting the QComp program, and they would have preferred it to be November. And then lines 16 through 20 all deal with changes to the charter school language. There's a technical change in calling applications affidavits and affidavits applications, so that's just clarified here. And then an effective date. There was a problem with when sponsors that are already sponsors need to go to the department and reapply, they needed to make this section effective for those groups of sponsors that are coming in after this preliminary group of sponsors right now looking to become sponsors. Then section 19 makes a clarification. There was a reference to being illegal and council thought it was better to say illegal or in violation of this section. It just makes a clarification. And then, again, the wording for teacher contracts. There isn't really teacher contracts in charter school agreements under this section. It was to say agreement sounds is more correct. And then section on page 122, delete section 24. That is a reference to teachers for school readiness. And that was, I'm going to check. Oh, I'm sorry, that's incorrect, not yet. On the reference to deleting section 24 is actually the trial placement for the academies. When this was brought forward from the department, the academies hadn't quite yet agreed to that language, and so the department just felt it was better to take out that language this year. And then on page 142, line 5, I think this gets us into the early education sections. And what this does is include in the list of program requirements have teachers knowledgeable in early childhood curriculum content and assessment and instruction. And then on page 142, delete section 7, that is the reference to a new subdivision that was included to that school boards must employ necessary qualified teachers. And that section is deleted in place of this number 10. And those would be the department's recommendations.
Okay. Any questions that members have? Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. At line 1.7 on posting the score, the highest assessment score, I think that's helpful, but I'm wondering if it might help further clarify, if it's not the intent, where there would be an indication as to whether it's a passing score. And if the department can tell us if that's their intent, or if not, I have a brief phrase that would make that clear.
Is there,
Mr. Chair and Senator Wieger, before Dr. Mattson comes to the table, the clarification to add the grad in for reading and mathematics is that if they don't pass, if they're not proficient on the MCA 2, then they will have to take the grad. If they are proficient on the MCA 2, then they won't have to take the grad for reading and mathematics. And so those two scores won't show up. That's where on line 1.10 you say when applicable, and maybe Dr. Mattson can add to that.
Dr. Mattson,
Mr. Chair, members, Dirk Mattson, Department of Education. I guess I'll be glad to answer questions. I think Dr. McQuaid explained it very accurately. It's an if applicable. Other statute language states that the first test that students are to pass or attempt to pass is the MCAs, and if not, then the grad is a substitute test. So it's just clarifying that documentation.
Thank you.
Any other questions that members have? Senator Rummel, do you want to move?
So moved.
Senator Rummel moves the A-17 amendment. Any changes to it? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Members, we do have one clarification or two clarifications of the amendment, the previous amendment that was adopted. Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman and members, some of this has been an iterative process as we went back and forth, and there are a couple of things that the Department of Education and Finance flagged for us. On line 1.24 and 1.25.
This is the A25 amendment, which was the first amendment that we dealt with. Mr. Nauman?
There is a recommendation that we strike the language based on the most recent February forecast so that they would use actual data for that purpose. And then a date change on line 1.33. Department of Finance recommends November 15th, 2010, instead of June 1, 2011.
Hey,
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin moves those two changes to the A25 amendment.
What was the first one?
Could you repeat those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, on line 1.24 and 1.25, we would strike based on the most recent February forecast.
Mr. Chair, just a parliamentary inquiry. Would it be cleaner if we moved to reconsider and then we did it that way and entered the amendment? Having been on the prevailing side, I move to reconsider the A25 amendment.
Senator Wieger moves to reconsider the A25 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scogan moves to amend the A25 amendment. On line 24, delete N25, delete the comma after 2010, and all of the rest of the 2020 or line 24, and line 25.
Just the word forecast.
Forecast, and then on line 133. Delete June 1st, 2011. Insert November 1st.
November 15th, Mr. Chair.
15th, 2010. On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
I move the A25 as amended.
Senator Wieger moves the A25 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay. All right, Senator Olson.
A6 amendment.
A6 amendment. Okay, I think everybody has the amendment. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a couple of amendments to the homeschool mandate reduction. On line 1.3, it's just clarifying the age. It doesn't change anything, but reaching the age of 7, which is our current law. And the sections deleted are in response to some concern about the county attorneys taking on this responsibility. So they agreed with the superintendents that we'll leave that as current law. So the sections 3 to 5 are in that regard, and they've been agreed to. So I appreciate your support.
Okay. On the A6 amendment, any questions, discussions? If not, all in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, I have the A7 amendment. As amendment is being passed out.
Excuse me, just a second, Senator Bonham. I think just to let the public know that we don't have the adequate number of copies of the amendment, that we're making copies right now, so in very short order we'll have more copies of each amendment. So please be patient, and if you have any questions, if there's something that you maybe you don't have a copy, just you raise your hand up. But we're getting more copies made at this moment. So as we move forward, we'll have adequate copies. Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A7 amendment is with regard to technology. If members might recall, when I first introduced Senate File 10, it had many other provisions in it that were what we considered reform-oriented provisions. One of them was the reading that ended up traveling on its own. The quality rating system ended up in a separate bill. And one of the pieces that has not been pulled out and gone separately is the technology provisions. This was in the policy bill that did pass last year, and I am now offering it as an amendment to this bill. I serve on the Minnesota Education Technology Task Force as one of the two legislators. There's a senator on that and a representative. And we work with heads of the IT departments from school districts all over the state, as well as people from the department and other interested stakeholders to determine the best way that we can utilize technology going forward, with the commitment that, number one, there's some standardization, that we have the guidelines around how we use technology, what tools are in classrooms, that we investigate where there are gaps around the state, where some districts have access to these tools and others don't. And so this amendment sets out exactly what it is we're wanting school districts to have, and directs the commissioner and the department to identify where that's missing. So with that, I offer the amendment.
As we move forward with more online learning and STEM-type programs, I imagine this is even more important.
Yes.
The discussion on the A7 amendment, if any, is it your amendment, I think? I think it's out. Okay. On the A7 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted. Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A9 amendment. And while it's being passed out, I will just note that this is the language that we have had a discussion on regarding charter schools in setting boundaries, and that it seemed that from this committee there was an interest in continuing that, but having language that would address it in a positive way. And so I looked extensively on the internet as to how President Obama is really targeting charter schools, and he has noted a number of times to serve underserved populations. So the bill would read that we would allow a district to limit enrollment to a geographic area and the new languages in which the school is located when the majority of students served by the school are members of underserved populations. I will note that we looked at potentially targeting to students in a particular, like who had compensatory funding, had Title I. Those are formulas that could change. So this seemed to be something that I heard from many people met the intent and was addressed in a appropriate way.
Okay, I think as we'll just let that amendment get out there. That was one that we had a lot of discussion around on one particular word there. And it looks like this is a very positive change. In her hand.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. The word underserved, do we have any meaning of that? I mean, it sort of has some intuitive sense to it, but it's not a very precise word. Is there something that is in statute already on this, or do we need to do anything with this, or is we just accept the fact that everybody knows what we're talking about, even though it's not defined? Or how do we take that?
I'm not sure. Senator Salzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Han, I have really struggled to try to find words, because when we do target dollars to a population, we define them. I mean, we define free and reduced lunch for compensatory. We look at health care. So trying to get away from that, and, you know, I've tried to work on this to find something. The other alternative at this point is just to strip that paragraph out. And if we're having problems, trying to determine how to describe a population. But this is what I came up with, again, because other terms that would refer to compensatory or Title I or other things could change as well in terms of our funding models. So underserved seemed to be, that is a term that is being used repeatedly. It is broad, but I think it meets the intent of that there is a circumstance under which we would allow a charter school to have a boundaried area.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it may not be precise, but it is. I think it's flexible enough to allow that school to establish some criteria within that framework that would give them the basis for their selection or their priority for to maintain the attendance of the enrollment of the population that they do want to serve. And I think that could be reflected. It could be reflected in the scores that they're coming with. If they are, have not been learning in their other environment, there could be a number of measures that they could use, but that allows the flexibility at that school to accomplish their mission.
I'll go with it. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Underserved is a little on the vague side. I'm thinking of my own districts, one of which can't pass a referendum and doesn't get very high state per pupil funding, and I would consider them underserved in many ways, and so I'm a little concerned that it could apply to many things. Because the students often who had fit this previous definition are often served well financially. They get more than the state average, absolutely, but they're underserved in other ways. But it's something that maybe we have a difficult time defining.
Senator Hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the discussion, and I wasn't. I understand the intent, and I support the intent of the language. And the only concern I would have is if this would be misunderstood or misinterpreted. But if there's a high degree of confidence that this would provide flexibility to allow charter schools to do what they are currently doing, that would be my hope, is that would and so as long as that there's that sense that language does it, then I'm all right with it. I just am a little concerned, as you are, about whether it could be misunderstood or misused in some way.
So perhaps
Senator Saltzman.
So on this point, Mr. Chair, would people feel better if it read if a majority of the students served by the school receive compensatory revenue?
No.
Are eligible for compensatory revenue?
No.
Okay.
Leave it the way it is.
I'm trying to find consensus.
Okay.
Or well, else we can maybe take.
Maybe Mr. Brown from the department. This would seem to a group of well-educated people a relatively easy task, but what are we trying to do in that paragraph C?
Mr. Chairman, Morgan Brown with the Department of Education. Just to clarify for folks, this is in the section of the charter school law that deals with how admissions procedures take place in charter schools. So what this would say and what the current provision said is that a charter school may, if they are over-enrolled in a particular grade and have to do a lottery, they may essentially do an admissions preference for students within a particularly defined geographical area that's less than a whole district. Or it could even be limited district because charter schools are essentially open enrollment currently, just like they can do a preference now for siblings of a student currently in a charter school. So those students get preference over other students that are enrolled if they have to do a lottery process. I just want to comment on the language. I think Senator Saltzman has, we really appreciate, this wasn't a department concern, but given the discussions that have come forward, it seems to me that the language here that Senator Saltzman has proposed is consistent with the intent that was in that original provision in the bill and is an improvement in that language that was in the statute previously, which I think a lot of people found confusing. And to the extent there's any concerns about definitions or the practicality of implementing this, we're more than happy to work with Senator Saltzman as this bill goes forward to make any improvements that are needed.
Okay. Any other questions that members have? Thank you, Mr. Brown. On the A9 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A4. Most of the members have that. Senator Saxon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a relatively simple amendment. It simply allows for a mental health professional to provide a written document for a child to be excused from school for a mental illness.
Any question, discussion on that? I thought we had. All right. On Senator Saxog's A4 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A30 amendment. Is this my time?
Yes.
A30 amendment. And members, while this amendment is being passed out, it refers to some language in the literacy bill that we had an extensive discussion about. And after I left committee, I went and checked some of the mail I had in my folders from last January, and I was kind of struck that the last witness that came to the table had asked us to change three words in the literacy document, and I don't know if that testimony got enough attention, and so I'd like to bring it back before you. I received earlier in the session communication from the Executive Board for the Minnesota Academy of Reading and the Executive Board for the Minnesota Reading Association. And that includes Carolyn Gwynn from Anoka Hennepin, Terry Christensen from Hamlin, Gail Jordan from Bethel, Bobby Gale from the licensed, I think she's a licensed reading consultant, Patsy McGush, I'm not saying that right, from the University of Minnesota, Morna Rowe from Ogilvie School District, Elaine Rutten from St. Cloud State University, Julie Scullin from Anoka Hennepin School District, Ann Redfern from Minnetonka, Kristen Thomas from North Branch, Sarah Haskett from Rutledge, and Neva, I won't be able to say the name correctly, Stebner from Delano School Districts. These are reading experts, and as we've heard at the table a number of times this session, we are citizen legislators. And language matters. And so I called over the weekend to find out, were those three words really important to this group? And first of all, I want to compliment Senator Saltzman because she put forward a bill that does two things, at least as I understand her bill. First, she wanted to ensure that all teachers being trained will have a full range of tools at their disposal. And second, she wanted to better equip teachers to make the judgments they need to make regarding the instruction for their students. So on page 45, line 3, these reading experts would like to reinstate the stricken language. The word replicated, they tell us. I'm sorry, reliable. is a broader word. There are very few curricula or programs or strategies that can carry the title replicated. To be replicated refers to large-scale studies that involve random assignments of large numbers of students. And in recent years, there have been very few of these studies because of dollars. The federal funds and the dollars to do the studies have not been there. Using the word reliable includes the word replicated, but it also includes reading researcher that has been identified as sound approaches to reading programs. And many of these are being used in our school districts as we speak. So they would like to reinstate the word reliable. They would also, on page 47, delete the word sequential. And they appreciate the changes that Senator Saltzman made in the bill to take it from direct instruction. But they suggest that the word sequential takes away the judgment of the teacher. Here we have a bill that asks teachers to use their full range of skills, and then we insert in bill language that they have to do it in a certain order. And they would prefer to take that out. Not every child needs the same sequence. So adapting their instruction to the children would be easier if we take that word out. And this is how seriously our reading experts are taking our legislation. They are paying very close attention. And then finally on page 48, line 18, reinsert the word and balanced. Again, Senator Salzman has brought to our attention the importance of the five strands, the importance of the various reading strategies. And so they are kind of amazed that we would strike the word balance, because balance remains, balance implies that the teachers can use the full range of intervention skills and strategies that best meet the individual needs. Scientifically based and balanced reading instruction also means that a complete comprehensive approach will be taken to providing instruction in the various components of reading. So when I talk to these people over the weekend in the past week, what they would like to say is that if we change these three words, that they think that the bill is more consistent with its intent.
Senator Rummel, are you sure that these are not reading experts and attorneys?
One of the things, as I was sitting during the hearing, why are we quibbling about these words? And language matters. When you're up at a different level, these words have very precise meaning. And so by narrowing, in the belief of all these people, we are narrowing, in fact, what we say we're trying to broaden for our teachers. And so they would like to see these words change.
Okay. I can appreciate yesterday after the hearing we had a discussion with the department over assessments. And that's another whole area that's extremely technical. And so I think, individual words do matter. So, Senator Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I think, had her hand up first. If you want to let her go first,
I'll
go second.
Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to point out to people, I just handed out this report that came from the Public Strategies Group. It was funded by a group of five foundations. I don't know if we've had a chance to look at this. It's not that they're necessarily supporting these, but they really asked where could we put investments to make a difference, and the pages that follow the front page results special education, modest changes, better education, major savings. And if you go to page 5, it does address that this group came forward to talk about if we could make major, modest changes to have major savings. They talk about RTI. They talk about funding the RTI Center. They talk about the Reading Corps. And they note specifically that in these programs that are using specific reading interventions. And if we could fund, which we are doing in our bill, these programs, the potential per year in savings is $71 million by making sure that kids who, if they had access to more specific strategies to address learning disabilities, we wouldn't have to be doing all all the remediation. And so all these pieces fit together. So while we're funding the RTI Center, while we're, you know, funding the Reading Corps, the reading strategies that we're talking about, we just need to make sure that teachers have them as they go through the pipeline, and that bill does not have a fiscal note on it. And I appreciate that the teachers are trying to work with us. But I want to go back to the fact that this bill is about what's being taught in our teacher colleges. And if you, you know, look at the language that is in here, of where the changes are suggested, on page 48.10, all colleges and universities approved by the Board of Teaching. This is what we want taught in our teacher colleges. It is not really going to what kind of curriculum or instruction. So I'll go by these word changes. In terms of the change that is being suggested on line 45.3, where we have put the word replicated instead of reliable, this is the gold standard. That doesn't mean that we're not able to use other strategies, but don't we want to make sure that teachers who are in our colleges and universities always make sure that they have the best, that they understand that they are being taught with those best strategies? And that's what's coming out of the scientific-based research instruction, the SBRI. So that's where, again, we just want to make sure they are really at the gold standard. Certainly they address other things, but this is not limiting. It's just making sure that they have those strategies. In terms of the other change on page 47, again, this is that we want teachers to understand the sequence of reading. It's not saying that when they're teaching students, you know, that we assess students and find out this child has moved beyond this. This child is competent. They're flying. Let them go. But remember when we've heard about the math standards, when I believe Dr. Schmidt was here and he talked about how we teach math. Why are we getting better results in math right now? Because we're teaching them sequentially. So this is just saying we want teachers to understand the sequence in instruction. It's not saying at all, again, help them understand the process of how we build it. So that is a key word that we just want to make sure they understand that. And on the last word regarding balanced, absolutely we want balance. That's what this bill is all about. But if we're going to use the word balance, then it needs to be defined, because balance is also a code word for whole language, which there's the reading wars of phonics versus, you know, the whole language. This bill is not about that. We're basically saying we're not pushing one particular technique over another. We do want balance, but if we're going to use the word balance, what does that mean? Is there a definition? So we're going with, again, we're going back to the application, and again, they must require that the teacher preparation programs must require instruction, not that we have to use these in our schools. So that's where I think I'm continuing to be a little frustrated, in that this bill is being interpreted as how we teach reading in our schools. We just want teachers to have those skills. So I would oppose the amendment.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to build a little bit on what Senator Saltzman has said in the use of these words. You recall when we had our discussion the other day, there was concern because of the word direct instruction meant something specific, a specific program. And so that was changed to the wording that we have in that area now. It is true that the balanced instruction that's in there has been in the law for some time. It hasn't caused any change. The results that we are getting are still as abysmal out in the reading centers, in our reading classes, because we see that coming from the State Department of Education in the timeline and the relationship. You've all received this in the past on the NAEP scores, and we're just fluctuating. We're even going down in terms of the number of students that are even below basic. And so If this is being interpreted and used as a means for doing short shrift on all of the five strands, we think it just ought to come out, because that's a basic tenet of what we're trying to do, is being sure that the teachers are getting their fair shake at learning the skills in all five strands of it. So I really do oppose that as well. The reliable versus replicated, you know, when you read that sentence, we're talking about comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction, includes a program or a collection of instructional practices that is based on valid, obviously it's measuring what it's supposed to, replicated evidence. This doesn't say that it has to be replicated studies. It means that when you use them, you see evidence that they're bringing about some results. And there are many experiences that classroom teachers are having that they are seeing that they've been able to replicate the kind of evidence that is the basis for our having these standards in law right now. So I'm concerned about reading experts who want to keep the status quo, because it's the status quo that we're trying to change and assure that our teachers are equipped, as so many of them want to be. Now, if these folks that you've talked about are representing schools that have 95% proficient at third grade, show it to me, and I'll back down. But that is not the case, and that is a finding from out in the Yale University area that says 95% of all children can learn to read relatively easily, regardless of whether they are rich or poor, bright or burdened with a low IQ. That should be our goal, and we're not getting there now, and so we feel that a few changes are in order, and I don't think they'll handicap anybody, but I think they hopefully will spur people on to doing some really positive things so that our teachers can have the kind of success, and their students even more. Thank you. I oppose this amendment as well.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
Colleagues and Mr. Chair, I would suggest that none of us are reading experts. And I would suggest that people who have given their entire lives to the teaching of reading, who spend their lives working on these things. We have a premier reading center right here at the University of Minnesota. If these people ask us to make some changes, that we ought to honor their commitment and their understanding of the subject, which goes far deeper than ours. And when we hold up a graph like Senator Olson just held up, that graph does not tell us what the cause of the reading progress has been. All it tells us is what the scores are. We cannot make that mental transfer that we blame it on the teachers. If you talk to our demographer, if you talk to our folks who are following the test scores, we know that there is a correlation of the lack of opportunities outside the classroom that do affect the way our children are performing. In my school district, when my children went to school, there was 11% free and reduced lunch. Today, we are at a 28% free and reduced lunch, and some of our schools are up to 40%. Yet their scores are improving. So I would suggest that a simple graph like you were shown cannot definitively say where the problem lies. It simply tells us that we are not making progress. And I don't want to drag this out mercilessly, because I know we have a lot on our table. I have other data that will show that the extreme impact that poverty and low income have on children. And I could pass it out, but I don't want to delay the time. So to make the conclusion that our teachers are failing and our systems are failing is totally out of line. It is completely out of line. If I could pull it up easily. The second report on homeland insecurity, which details the results from UNICEF. The infant mortality in U.S. is 20% higher than in Canada, 100% higher than Japan. So we're doing cross-country rankings. the National Assessment of Education Progress, the states with, say, the lowest child poverty rates are the states with the highest NAEP scores. And those kids that have the most kids in poverty have the lowest NAEP scores. Doesn't mean that children can't learn. It does mean that children, that there are factors outside the classroom that affect student performance. I have a whole bunch of stuff. I don't want to waste your time with it, but I would contradict the evidence or the assumption that our schools and our reading are doing poorly based on that one score. And I think we should support the people who have given their lives to this work.
Senator Saltzman.
I appreciate all that you do, Senator Rummel, to work on education. I truly support you. On this issue, these words and this legislation was not pulled out of the air. I could bring in, although some of the people I've been referencing are national experts, Reed Lyon, who is known for his love of children and everything he's doing, who's coming to the Mayo Clinic this month to talk about this issue. And he's going to talk about teacher preparation. It's not that our teachers are failing. Mike Savage was here 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was some of the most hopeful testimony that we heard from a teacher who said, I learned how I could make a difference. This isn't about teachers failing. If we give them the right kind of training, they can soar with our kids. That's what this is about, training our teachers. Who might need to sort of change what they're doing? The people who are training them. And why should we have to pay our school districts to retrain teachers? So I could bring in pages as well to document these words are important, and they are backed up in research, and they are backed up by people that if I could bring them in would talk about how important they are. So they are. They're not just words that I'm not an expert, and so I relied on people and went to national experts on this issue, and I think the data is clear that when we use these strategies, teachers are making a difference.
Members, I can just feel the TV audience that's watching us. As one side speaks, they just kind of sway over to that side, and as the other side speaks, they kind of go back. And at least that's where I'm at. I mean, it's sounds like very persuasive arguments on both sides. Senator Therese Ray first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of failing to understand why is that on page 45, line 3, we have to go either way, reliable or replicated. And I think these two words can be there. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, so I don't know why we just not simply leave the words in there. I don't know why we have to take replicated out in order to leave reliable and take out applicable. Replicated, those two words are pretty good. So I would like to propose that we simply keep both.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have to admit that I'm Senator Saltzman and I think so much alike on this issue, it's kind of getting scary. But I don't like to see us labeled as accusing schools and teachers as failing, because that is not the point. The point is that we don't believe we are doing as well as we can. And I for one, am on a I just dislike the use of excuses of even the environmental factors when we have evidence that kids, regardless of them, can learn. And they can learn to read, and reading is the absolute most important skill that they're going to need all through life. And so I stay with the what we have. I don't have any objection to putting reliable. Reliable is more tied to specific testing provisions, but the replicated shows that there's some evidence that it actually brings about the results. It's been interesting in this whole process that in the universities there are mixed feelings as well, and we tend to find the support for the kinds of efforts that we are making from the ed psych departments, but not from the teacher ed departments. That should tell us something. I think the kind of results that we need to get, and we're trying to kind of push And we've made some progress in the process of the rulemaking, but the pressure needs to continue. And so I urge you to defeat this amendment. If you want to consider Senator Torres Ray's notion, we can address that. But I hope that you will vote this amendment down, that we can go forward and work toward improvement of the reading instruction in our state.
Okay. Ms. Allswager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education, Minnesota. And I want to say thank you to Senator Saltzman and Senator Olson for bringing the issue of reading instruction and preparation before the group, because it is a very important issue. I do want to remind everybody that the Board of Teaching has been working for approximately 2 years on raising the standards for teacher preparation in collaboration with the higher ed institutions. I think some of these discussions have actually helped try to move things forward in that way. Senator Saltzman made a comment about this being in higher ed, and it is in higher ed, but I also remind you that assessment drives instruction. Just think about the MCA2s and what's happening with the MCA2s. So the teacher candidates who take the assessment are assessed in a manner in how they will teach. If you look at the top of page 45, line two, it talks about reading programs or collection of instructional practices. This clearly shows that the instruction that they receive at the higher ed institution is expected to go to the classroom. I want you to know that the International Reading Teachers Association and the Minnesota Reading Teachers Association also have concerns and would support Senator Rummel's amendment. In fact, they have a conference here with tens of thousands, as I understand, of reading teachers from around the world coming. They would not support this language. Let me try to describe the difference between reliable and replicated. Actually, what I will do is talk about what replicated means, because this is an important issue. Keeping both words will not create the balance that we think is necessary. I have some notes from a reading teacher who has been before your committee before and has testified. The term replicated has been added to this language, and it means that they have to be research-based reading programs that school districts currently have in their system could not be used, because they don't meet, as Senator Saltzman stated, the gold standard of being replicated. This is the information that I received from the reading teacher. Replicated means that they have, I have to find exactly where this wording is, that they have been part of a large-scale research study and found to be replicable, used in the same way by teachers all across the country, with the same results from students. And there are excellent reading programs that have not been a part of these replicable studies, and that is the concern. The sequential language as well gets into the issue of these research-based that must be done in a certain order. It gets to be very complicated. I guess the bottom line is that by taking out the replicated, you then are giving more flexibility where teachers can continue to follow the five strands that are listed. There isn't any problem with those, but that they would not have to discard some of the reading programs that they have that wouldn't meet the gold standard of being replicated. Senator Saltzman made an excellent point when she said that we need to train these teachers in some of these instructional methods. We would agree. We agree that teachers need far more training, more staff development on how to reach all kids. This is one method. By putting in replicated, it is one method, and kids need a variety, and that's why we would support Senator Rimmel's language to provide more balance.
Okay. Senator Saltzman?
There. I don't want to belabor this point, but One of the issues that we've heard repeatedly is that the teachers coming out of our colleges are not trained in these strategies. We hear that repeatedly from young teachers who are hired, who work with some of the teachers who are trained in these. I will just say that when we looked at the research from the Minnesota Reading Corps and we saw students, we saw the incredible gains. We look at the data of the RTI centers and the SCRED districts that are using these strategies. These strategies are not limiting teachers. These teachers are being trained in these strategies to work with RTI. No child is being harmed. Children are being helped. And I don't know if we aren't willing to raise the bar and say, this is what we want to make sure. It's like a medical doctor who gets trained. You want your doctor to be trained in the best cancer treatment modes. You want them, whether or not they use that or not, you want them trained in those methods in case it's your family member. Well, if your child struggles to read, you want your teacher to have the resources, the tools in their tool belt to help your child.
Senator Salzman, how does this language or how does it compare with what was in the policy bill, education policy bill from last year?
Yes.
Senator Salzman?
Yes. It is, Mr. Chair, essentially exactly the same language. There were some dates changed, but in terms of replicated, balanced, I think we changed direct to explicit. Otherwise, it is really the same bill. We changed a couple dates. I will tell you that MACT, which is the Association of Higher Ed, I have a meeting with them on Tuesday. We've been trying to meet this week, but our meetings keep getting changed, to talk about the implementation of the test, that they would like to talk about maybe delaying the implementation of the test slightly so that they can change their curriculum, which is interesting because the pushback has been, oh, we're already teaching these strategies. Why do we need this? So they are going to have to change. Mr. Savage, who was here soon after meeting with us, went to Mankato State. They're very impressed with what he's doing, and they want to be able to start incorporating that. So I'm encouraged that this conversation is pushed. We need to keep pushing and make a statement that this is important. And again, it does not address. There is a separate section in statute about how districts select their reading instruction, and this does not limit that.
Okay. On Senator Rummel's motion on the
A30
amendment, any further discussion? Any further questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
That's right.
Okay, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A5.
Not into this. My buddy's
fine. Fayette.
Is that Fayette?
Yep.
Members, as it's coming around, this is a provision that was in the 2008 omnibus bill last year, passed out of both bodies. It is the physical education portion, adding a half credit to physical education. And, just I'm a big advocate of this one. I wish it we could have got it taken care of last year. It really does. I think the studies show that it leads to higher achievement. There are now opportunities for school districts to pick up some more money, both on the state and federal level. The Minnesota State Health Improvement Program money, about $47 million, goes to schools that have these kinds of physical education programs. On the national level, of course, there's PEP money, the Physical Education Program grant money. A little over $1 million picked up by some schools last year. Wisconsin brought in almost $4 million into their school system because they had physical education programs in place. And I just think it's important. We talk a lot, members, about healthy bodies, about understanding the correlation between higher achieving and taking good care of ourselves. We ask schools to serve good snacks, good lunches. And I think as our state changes, as the even in greater Minnesota, we don't have all the farm kids anymore and the loggers and the trappers and hunters. We have kids that just aren't as active anymore, and we're seeing higher rates of obesity. And I just think it's important that we give them kind of the basic knowledge of how to live healthier lifestyles, and this would do that.
Senator Scogin, a couple questions. Can you expand a little bit on the federal dollars and how they might flow from the federal government to school districts?
I don't know a lot about them, except that school districts that have physical education programs can apply for these PEP grant dollars. And I do know I had some of the Minnesota school districts the last few years that had actually gathered in some of those dollars. I think the total was a little over $1 million, but it's a grant program that comes from the national, from the feds, and they apply for them depending on the rigor, I think, of their physical education program.
And Senator Scogin, is the federal awarding of those grants, do you know, is that tied to a mandatory program, or I guess the
whether
other
it's
would,
an elective or not?
Elective, yeah.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I see two people here that want to comment on this, School Boards Association and others. So why don't you come up, and if we can keep it relatively short.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Shep Harris here on behalf of the American Heart Association. Senator, Mr. Chair, to answer your question, this is the Carol White Physical Education Program. I do not know whether or not it's mandatory or elective, but I do know it's directly tied to state standards. And in the past several years, we have had school districts that have been successful in gaining access to some of these federal dollars because they're able to apply their standards to neighboring states, statewide standards, for example, Wisconsin. However, as Senator Scogin answered, that if we actually had statewide standards, then more schools would be able to access and apply for these dollars and potentially get up to as much as, say, for example, what Wisconsin is doing. So it's all based on statewide standards.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I found my list. St. Cloud last year, over $490,000. Worthington, $280,000. Hopkins, $430,000 in PEP grants.
Maybe that's how Hopkins got that good basketball team.
Wouldn't we all apply then?
Watch out for the northern tier. Ms. Kelleher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We have concerns about this, Mr. Chairman, in a year when we're looking at less per-pupil aid than we had in previous years. To make this a mandatory graduation and a required course offering just increases the amount we have to provide at the local level. And as you look at a lot of those, I ask you to keep that in mind. We brought forward 100 mandate repeals at the beginning of the year at your request. And this is just another item we'd have to add to the list at this time. So I'm not going to argue the merits of doing this. But I do think these are challenging times, and it's not a time to be adding to school districts' plates.
Mr. Chair, if I might, to that point, over 90% of our schools have some form of physical education program now. And so by bringing this forward, I don't really look at it as a mandate as much as a laying in the floor of where we want school districts to start. In fact, the average in our school districts is about 1.3 credits to graduate. So we're asking for a half credit to kind of have the floor where we want school districts to start, get them all involved in wellness.
Senator Bonhoeff and
Mr. Chair, and Senator Scogin, I concur with your assessment about how important physical activity is to young people. And, you know, I was the kind of mom that I had one of my kids was particularly hard to keep still, and so he was in three sports after school. You know, I was like, if you aren't working, you know, you're in trouble. So, but I do oppose this because I don't think it gets at the heart of what we're trying to accomplish. And I don't know how many members have read this new popular book called Spark, but it talks about the huge gains in academic achievement when some of these school districts took on having their kids do aerobic exercise almost every day. And they found it was one particular instance where they were giving school districts incentives to get their kids in running clubs and finding alternative ways other than just, you know, Phi Ed, where we're getting all kids to raise their heart rate. And if you look at, you know, what happens in Phi Ed, oftentimes, you know, it's the kind of sports where those who aren't very active sort of sit on the sidelines. And there's just, I'm not convinced that this half a credit is going to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. I'd rather see us over the interim creatively figure out how we can provide some resources for school districts to make certain that every person in, you know, from kindergarten, preschool, all the way through a senior in high school is active. And we know that if we could do that in some way, our, you know, the grades would go up, the amount of trouble kids get into goes down. I just think that this is a very important issue, and so I'd hate to solve it with a Band-Aid, and not to offend you, but I think this is a Band-Aid. I don't think it gets at the heart of the issue, and so that's why I don't support it.
Senator Olson. And
thank
Senator
you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate, Senator Scogin, that you brought up that 90% of the schools, because I didn't know the answer to that, that 90% of the schools do have programs. Do we know anything about the 10% that don't and whether they have athletic programs, even if they don't have a specific Phi Ed program? This last weekend, a person that I know was sharing a bit about his life and who he was and kind of enumerating things. And the thing that kept coming out was the influence that a coach, I mean, describing his family, but that a coach had on his life in all dimensions, not only the physical activity and bringing out the best of him in that area, but across the dimension. And I know that has value as well. But could you answer that, Ms. Kelleher, if the 10% has other kinds of options within their program?
Okay, Ms. Kelleher and then Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to correct that number. I actually think he's on the low side, folks. These are locally developed standards. Every school district in the state should be offering a physical education program. So 100% should be the correct number, not just 90. The question becomes what curricular model you're using, and that's really where the districts see the cost, is if they aren't using these curricular models, there's going to be some cost to those districts. And we know they are out there. But coaching and surely extracurricular activities are one of the highlights. We've been seeing the state high school league tournaments go on, and it's just a joy to see kids excel and do well. And it's something we celebrate.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, I'll just mention I'm looking at a local impact note that the School Board Association requested through the Senate Tax Committee chair last year based on this language, which is pretty similar, or very similar, nearly identical to what we're offering in this amendment. And 99% of the school districts that responded to the survey offer a minimum of one half credit, and more than 83% already have some sort of standards that could match up with either the national standards or the Quality Teaching Network benchmarks that we're proposing in this language. And Mr. Chair, just for a point of information, I wanted to respond to Senator Bonhoeff's comment. The book that she's referring to, Spark, was written by Dr. John Rady, a Harvard professor, who we actually had testify on the House side earlier this session in support of this bill, linking that basically physical education equals smarter kids. So I just wanted to state that for the record, that he actually does support this legislation.
Okay. Senator Michelle.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thanks, Senator Scogin, for offering this. I
I like this language and appreciate the work that the Heart Association has done over the years on this issue. And I guess also a bit in response to Senator Bonhoff's thought, I do think this is a real minimum requirement and something we probably shouldn't just let go if and when we pass this kind of language. But I would join Senator Bonhoff on the Senate aerobic committee this summer, if that's what it takes, Mr. Chair, because I agree it's the issue is worth more of our time as a committee and probably goes into a multiple session kind of discussion. But I think this is a line in the sand, kind of a bare minimum that we should stand for. We have in the past. This is language we passed before, Mr. Chair, so I support it and hope the committee will give it full consideration.
I think, Senator Michelle, I think you're absolutely right. One of the national epidemics is obesity and health of our citizens. And
I'm
fine. I think the finger was pointed at me. But.
Now, Mr. Chair, they're pointing out that I'm uncharacteristically eating a donut.
I'm just going to go down the list here, so I have your name. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Torres Ray had her hand up first, though. And
I have her next.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, so I will take my turn. I just want to note that this was an issue that was in, we had a lot of discussion on last year, and I really tried to work with American Heart to find a little bit of compromise language to acknowledge that struggle with this is that we are asking kids to take more in other areas, and some kids are then having to look at this and find alternatives, doing like summer programs or online programs to meet either other academic areas or this. And this doesn't really give school districts that are offering programs, and mine do require physical education and help, but it takes away some of the flexibility that they might have in terms of their curriculum. And also, as Senator Bonhoff said, for those kids who are real involved in sports, how might we acknowledge that? Because I think that's where I see a lot of kids really developing the lifelong sports. Not all kids, and we need more of them. But, you know, to be meaningful, if kids are in high school and we haven't caught them in elementary or middle school to become more active and we give them just one semester, I'm concerned that we don't have some sort of waiver in here or anything. And that was one thing that I know I worked on hard that was in the policy bill last year for those students who, and not just one quarter or one season of sports, but I think that my amendment last year was to have two seasons of a Minnesota State High School League sport and a parent's, you know, permission in order to waive this so that those kids who are physically active, we acknowledge that and they don't have to give up another course in order to fit this in.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say thank you to Senator Scogin for doing this. I have been assigned to work on some issues related to child obesity in Minnesota, and we have some alarming statistics, as you stated earlier. We need to do something about it. And I think part of what Senator Scogin is trying to do is to really move our state in that direction. And, you know, I get frustrated with our attempts or lack of attempts to really move us in a direction that really address these issues. Perhaps, you know, Senator Bonhoff, and I would like to add my name to that list, Senator Michelle, of people who will be working with Senator Bonhoff to really put funding behind this. Because we constantly do this. We are saying, you know, when we talk about achievement gap, when we talk about obesity, when we talk about physical education, yeah, we need to do more. But, you know, this is really not the right thing. We need to do more than this. I think this is a step in the right direction. It will force us to really look at what kind of resources are we putting in place so that the schools can really comply with this, so that districts can really do what we are asking them to do. And maybe then, after we pass this legislation next year, Senator Bonhoff will work together to make sure that we put the funding behind it so that it actually gets done. That, I think, is true commitment to our children and really to address the significant problems that we have today in child obesity and other areas related to physical fitness.
Thank you, Senator Ray. Therese Ray. And then for the funding, we're going to turn to Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Read my mind.
We have this 3/8 amendment.
Okay. Well, there you go. And
water aerobics. We need to
and solar heated pool. Mr. Chair, you know, and I was going to talk about the funding, not exactly in that way, but that's something to really consider because. This isn't my favorite way to achieve the goal that we're talking about, but I don't know that we have other options, and I just want to remind the committee that last year I talked about recess. And when a constituent first brought the idea of recess as sort of a fundamental issue at school, I kind of laughed, and I'm not laughing anymore. And I think last year this committee did support that concept, but the full Senate didn't, and a lot of people are still laughing at the concept that recess is the answer. And I'm not saying recess is the answer, but, you know, getting kids to get outside and move and do aerobics or run or sit on those exercise balls, whatever it is, there's a lot of things that we can do to get them active that doesn't require a mandate and a standard and a licensed teacher. And I wish we could get it done that way, but we're not getting it done that way. So I have to support this because we have to get it done. And, you know, Mr. Harris said active kids are smart kids. Active kids are also healthy kids. And, you know, that point's been made by several of you. But I want to really comment that this is one of the real flaws of our whole funding philosophy because if we do not address this issue, this is going to be one of the biggest cost drivers for our state 10 and 20 years from now. We know we're already seeing that. And so it's one of those pay now or pay later issues, and we're not paying now. But we need to remember that we won't be able to afford the health care costs if we don't do this now. And we also need to remember that there's a lot of free and easy and simple ways to get our kids active. And so we have to, if we can't figure out those creative ways to do it by using recess or using other mechanisms, then we're going to have to do this. So I want to work on that Senate Aerobics Committee too and figure out how we can get our schools to incorporate our kids being active on a daily basis. And if it's not through a mandate, then what is going to work? We need to know the answer.
Okay, thank you. Senator Clark, and then Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, members, aside from my donut, you know, I think that the broader, to build on a few things that some folks have said, I mean, as written right now, I'd have to oppose this amendment because I really truly believe that 1 in 8 semesters is meaningless. It's not about changing lifestyles. It's about stuff. We need to totally, and yes, I will be happy to sign. I can bring my Turbo Jam tapes if you want, or the Yoga Booty Ballet if you like. We need to be looking at, I would much more prefer that we had a requirement that our schools, and I guess that would be another mandate, I'm sorry about this, that they're integrating wellness and physical activity, because that's what it really is. It does not have to be Phi Ed. It really, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of those things probably aren't a whole, you know, I think life skills, there's a lot of things that are very good, but it really should be something broader. Some of you may recall last year I talked about a requirement in our family from our kids being little, so they had to participate in something physically active and something artistic, always. Again, parental responsibility, I recognize that all parents are there, but one of our kids' schools, middle school on up, they had not only Phi Ed available, their main way, frankly, of doing it, because it wasn't a very big school, was you had to participate in a sport or something else. They had biking, intramural biking. They had walking. They had all of those kinds of things.
Skateboarding.
But it was not during classroom hours. It was, and we continue to have an issue with our junior high and high school kids with free time on their hands. We should be looking at things that are external that community volunteers could participate in. Now, I could, somewhat reluctantly, and Sarah Scogan, I don't know if you would agree to this, if two things were added in here, I could support this. One is that we have a waiver if the student is participating in a physical activity that's not a Phi Ed class. I'm not sure why it needs to be Phi Ed. Why can't they if they're participating in sports or if they're doing intramural something? And I'm using the word waiver. It doesn't have to be that. Council could help us. The other thing, and not to sound like a geek who was also physically active, but there are many students that this requirement would bring down their grade point average. And I think it's important, if you are on a weighted scale, that this would be pass-fail. Somebody shouldn't be penalized for trying to do something good. Now, if you have a student like me, I mean, I will date myself. I did take typing, which even with an A brought down my grade point average. I did extracurricular physical activity for the most part because it would have brought my grade point down. So if you would be willing to do those two things, I think we would have a stronger proposal that might actually live the day.
Senator, I don't think that was actually in the form of any motion.
I will work on an amendment, Mr. Chair. I just want to see if Senator Scogin and Mr. Harris might be willing to do those two things because it would be easy to do.
All right. Senator Hand was
I'll next. Work on an amendment to the amendment.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I'm just curious whether anybody in this committee thinks that school boards don't get this and why we think that we have to make them do this when they are very close to this problem. They deal with parents every day. They certainly are as smart as we are. They know how important physical education is, and I just would encourage us to not become the super school board of the state. We have elected people in every district in the state. They're very close to this issue, but they are not adopting these policies where they haven't adopted them for some reason that we don't know. And we should say they have a good reason for that, and we ought to respect that reason and not remove that from them. They're aware of this. They're trying to do what they can, but they have constraints that we are unaware of in every district. So let's not do this. Let's let school boards serve the function that we've created them to serve. And so I just urge us, with all respect to my colleague and friend, Senator Scogin, I love physical education. I don't want any obesity epidemics to continue. But it's the mechanism, and do we have faith and confidence in school boards to do this? And we should. So let's not pass it.
We'll try to bring this to a vote. Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to remind you that School Boards Association this year brought a bill that you heard in this committee on playgrounds and repairing our playgrounds and getting them up and going, which is Senator Anderson's recess question. There presently isn't a good way to handle school playgrounds and to make sure they're kept up to compliance, ready for our kids. And it's not only something we use during school, but all the way during the year. And so we actually need tools to get what you'd like to done. I'd love to be on or assist the committee in talking about this going forward. But it's really the whole gamut. It's not just this piece. There's other pieces that we really need to get us down the road.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I was, we do have the requirement in the compulsory attendance law, in the definition of a school, of the subjects that have to be a part of the curriculum in order to be a school. And physical education, I know, is in there. I don't know whether health is attached to it. I think it is, but we couldn't find it fast enough. But so it is there. But one of the things I'd also raise the issue, I like the dialogue that talking about trying to get at some answers here, because we've had some very thoughtful discussions around this table on what kind of evidence we have that where we're putting our money or where we're putting our effort is actually bringing about the desired result. You know, we've had it around one issue or another, but we do a lot of things, and we don't necessarily have that kind of evidence. Is a mandated half credit, do we have any idea that where that's required somehow? Has anybody tried to measure or tried to evaluate that versus another kind of a policy or practice that involves getting students active and learning or developing lifelong habits? I don't know the answer to that. I hear you say that we've got a very large number of schools that are already doing this. I don't know what these national associations that are also with pots of money. Are they giving it all to the schools that have already got good programs and are and winning sports teams, or are they using it? Are they targeting it to those who are struggling to bring about the kind of effective program that they would like? I think we've got a lot of things to look at in this area before we actually do a mandate of this school.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the conversation, and I just I don't think we ever go there if we don't start. We never get there if we don't start going there. So I was intrigued by Senator Clark's desire to fix it up a little bit, so I'm willing to listen to her amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
I believe Dr. McQuay has some language that we think works, recognizing we may need to, along the way, continue to work on a little bit.
Okay.
And thank you, Senator Scott.
Dr. McQuay. This would be to the A5 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.36 of the amendment, before the semicolon, insert on a pass or fail basis. And then the language, waiver language would read, and this can be for discussion first, and then I'll try and figure out where to put it. But the school district shall grant a waiver from the physical education credit requirement if the student is participating in a physical activity outside of the regular physical education course offering.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Dr. McQuay, did you say the school district shall offer a waiver or may offer a waiver?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, shall. So it would be a requirement that there be a waiver.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
And Senator Bonhoff, that means that if somebody was participating in any sport, or I'd say in the dance line, or, you know, an intramural or a club activity, or one of the other things, it might actually get us further down the road than what this amendment originally did, because we could be encouraging more people on a year-round or at least more than one semester basis. The other thing is, part of the reason for the pass-fail, I gave my geeky example, but and unlike what Sarah Michelle thought, I was very coordinated, there are some kids that getting a D is not a real good thing either. And I think we want to encourage them to participate and be involved. And, yes, there will always be some kids that are just going to walk slowly around the track field, but the point is we want them to actually get engaged, get physically moving, find out this is an okay thing.
Okay. Ms. Kelleher, you had raised your hand up.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to suggest the language. It would be the school board granting the waiver. The district itself doesn't act as an entity, so the board would shall grant waivers.
Okay. That will be included. Senator Salzman?
Yes. Perhaps just to bring this into this suggested amended, is that Section B really is very prescriptive of what kind of physical education program the school district has to offer. And that was one of the things that when I was working on this last year, it will change school districts that are doing this. It's raising the bar for them. And again, I'm concerned about this. This is another additional level of mandate. And if what we're trying to do is to encourage participation, I looked at these standards. My daughter did this. She did an opt-out. She had to test through all of these standards. And frankly, some of them had nothing to do with physical activity at all, which I think we're trying to get to. I mean, I think that's the intent of this committee. So I would perhaps suggest that we strike Section B as well, which is going to require the kind of physical education program that a school district would have to offer. So on one hand, we're offering something very flexible, and on the other side, now we're prescribing exactly what that program has to look like within the schools.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Salzman. Senator Scogin.
Thank you. And I think in the matter of time, I would support the Clark amendment to the amendment at this time and just ask that we don't at this time strike Section B.
Okay. We have, if Dr. McQuay could just restate the amendment, that's the amendment to the amendment that Senator Clark has offered. And then we'll try to get this, take this to Wolf. Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, I think I found a place to put it, too. On the bottom of page one of the amendment, page one, line 36, before the semicolon, insert on a pass or fail basis. And then on page two of the amendment, after line one, it would read page 34, after line 14, insert paragraph D, the school board shall grant a waiver from the physical education credit requirement if the student is participating in a physical activity outside of the regular physical education course offering.
Ms. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Deans recommended that we put or designee. Since this isn't a school board decision, it's just the way we funnel it. We could designate an individual to make sure these waivers are granted.
Mr. Chair, pardon me. I'd want to know what potentially the designee could be. Would that be the school district, or
yes,
would there be some other entity?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly, the superintendent is often the individual or assistant superintendent to do our administrative fees. We did discuss it, and we thought that was the best approach.
Senator Clark.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. Keller, I mean, I thought that that also might mean that that they might designate it back to the principal, which, and I was only concerned about school board because I was guessing that we might need a designee in there.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Keller. Senator Clark, I view this as it's a shall. It's not a school board decision. It's the boards are the ones that just do the active, not the buildings.
Just trying to make sure we had the language where you needed it.
Mr. Chair, we've got some people being called to another room, so I'll ask you to call the question.
Okay. On the A5 amendment, is this an amendment to the amendment?
Yes. I could incorporate her language into my amendment, Mr.
If you want to do that, then
gladly.
Okay. Senator Scogin includes that, those changes in the A5 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, on the A5 amendment as A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Oppose, the same sign?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chair.
Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I got called out to go do another bill before, but I have the 824 amendment.
Members, as that's being handed out, there's a quite a lengthy pile of stack of amendments that we have, and session does start at 11:30. So either we can move through those amendments, or we'll have to come back tonight, which I'm sure that many of you have sat through quite a few night meetings this week and probably appreciate having an evening off.
Well, Mr. Chair, hopefully this won't be too controversial. Senator Saxog and Senator Michelle and Senator Boff and I noticed when we got the bill rolled out yesterday, there was a few things on the early childhood side we thought had maybe inadvertently been left out, and this replaces those. These were things that were in the bill as we discussed it previously. The first is the Office of Early Learning. The second, so that goes through up down to lines 1.3. The second has to do with early Head Start. That was in the bill. That's just on the bottom of that page. Section 3 is pre-kindergarten through third grade program. And the main thing that we did different here is, and Mr. Nauman, I'm sure, will have something to say about this, but on line 2.10 is we said the program may strive to include the following. There's some really good things in there, but frankly, it might be pretty hard for any school district to reach. So we modified that. And then two other things quickly, subdivision, let's see, page 3, lines 3.11 through 3.18, has to do with the allowances. And as we're working through with Commissioner Inez about on the tax side, this is the other component we had passed last year, which basically just eases the whole it's a funding stream. It's not a program. So it is the funding stream situation that if a school, child care, Head Start, preschool program is already doing means-based testing, that they would basically be
certifying that the person is income eligible and that the family is, and that also that the department would provide a form if somebody else doesn't already have it. And then lastly, there was on line point 3.24, section 7, this has to do with school readiness, had some language with regard to teachers. Originally from the department, we struck that. This is with the department. This is the department language. And instead added to the list of things that we had already worked on school readiness is have teachers knowledgeable in early childhood curriculum content assessment and instruction. Right now, there isn't any particular requirement, so this just adds a bit more.
Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and Senator Clark and members, because that amendment was already adopted with the proposals by the agency, if you incorporate, Senator Clark, in your amendment, that delete lines 19 through 24.
I will be happy to do
3.19 to 3.24.
And members, that's on page 3 of the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Concern, Senator Clark, that I have, and I mentioned this yesterday as we were visiting. When we talk about the Office of Early Learning, if there is a cost, we don't have a fiscal note on it. And somewhere along the way, we have to be sure that that's covered. And so I don't propose to have the answer right now, but want to be sure that that's not a expense that we haven't calculated into the budget.
So and just to Mr. Let Chair, you know. Yes, and members, this is something Senator Stuff and I talked about that could be a concern. The hope is at this point in time is that we could utilize existing staff that perhaps they do. What happened in Pennsylvania, they didn't even have a move right away because that could create a cost. What we're really trying to do is break down kind of the barriers on maybe mindsets more than anything else and being able to focus a bit more. So if we want to continue to work with members of both departments and with the governor's office on trying to find something we can move forward on this year, it may not be possible that we can, but this continues to be something that the Early Childhood Caucus would like to see happen. And Senator Torres-Rea, I know that it doesn't go as far as you would like, but I also want to point out that if we don't do anything, the Governor's Early Childhood Council, this is one of their charges, is making some recommendations about all this. And I know while we don't normally talk about the other body, I believe the other body will have the other language, and then we can both work together with the Governor to find a good solution. The goal is to find something that could work.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand and then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to. Do we have a hearing on this bill?
Yes, we did. Committee?
We did. We didn't have a long time long discussion on it, but we had a hearing on it. Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I know that you made some comments or some changes based on some of the comments that I made when we did have that brief time, but I still have some concern about the reach of this. This entity, and on page 1, line 16, and on 1, line 26, whenever you use the word all, it's a lot of people scared who think that the government is going to take care of essentially take over the early childhood. We have in statute that parents have the primary
yes.
responsibility for the education of their children, and many of them take that seriously. And I think that that if you're going to coordinate all of those services, that seems to be encroaching on some of the independence that I think some would like to have. And also the rating system appears to reach through all of those areas across that. And I think that we should, and I think there's already some concern about the way in which that has been developed or is coming to pass that is really beyond what our scope of government should be. So I would urge you to it needs some more work.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson,
Senator Clark.
I apologize that all is still in there. I'd actually move to strike all on lines 1.16 and on 1.26. The quality rating system is actually already in the bill. So that's not part of this amendment. The office was just connected with that. But I agree with you all. Always makes people concerned. So I would incorporate that into this A24, Senator Olson, and then we'll keep working. We'll keep working on it.
Okay. Senator Therese Ray and then Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, I have a great deal of sympathy for you and admire your ability to work on this and really try to work with all of us to make sure that, you know, everybody has an opportunity to provide input. Part of what I struggle with is that this bill, in its original form, had some language which, you know, I'm ready to talk about a couple of amendments that actually were adopted. But then the language changed, and that's what we have in front of us now. And there is a definition of the early learning system in the previous bill.
I think that's in a different part of the bill.
Yeah, Senator, I'm just talking about generally, you know, this approach for the early learning concept and the office and the entire section that we have in this bill. Having said that, you know, I think what is difficult for me personally is to be able to track this language and to be able to track the changes. I know there are not really very significant things that I should be alarmed. I think that you have improved this language. But I'm just sharing with you that it is difficult for me to really track the language because this has changed. And I hope that in the future we're able to really look at, you know, I don't think that it will be, I know that it is not easy to be able to please everyone, but I prefer that we have different versions perhaps, and then if people do not agree with one version, well, it will die. That's what happens. And then we will have another rather than trying to compromise and introduce language. I have been very confused with this. I don't know if this is an appropriate time, but just to give you an example of something that happened with language that I added about cultural relevance and cultural competency, that language was not incorporated into this, and the staff tried to put an amendment that actually doesn't do what I intended to do, because the language that I suggested originally was to talk about practice, not about a culturally relevant office or system, because that is too expensive. So I'd like to talk about that particular amendment after this, if I may, just to clarify even further the confusion that I have with respect to the changes that have been incorporated into this portion of this bill.
Senator Roblin.
Oh, thank you, Madam or Mr. Chair. I know we had a kind of a lengthy debate about the hours that would be required as the minimum. And I'm just wondering if Senator Clark would consider 15 hours. I pointed out at the last meeting that actually I would like to go to 12, but I don't know that I'll get her there. Because our current law for kindergartners is averaging 2.5 hours a day. And this is longer. But, if we did 5 3-hour days, would be 15 hours. And that would be from 8:30 to 11:30 or 9 to noon or 1 to 4 or 12:30 to 3:30. And those are pretty long days for little kids that are 3 and 4 years old. And, you know, and that means you'd be doing it every day. And I don't even know that I support every day. I think a lot of times these kids get a little worn out, and maybe they should have Wednesdays off in between two days of preschool. So I just want to have that discussion a little further, Senator Clark, because I think this is a pretty high standard.
Mr. Chair, and
Senator Clark.
Just for what it's worth, we changed the school readiness to 12. And this was, again, originally the department language, although I will say we did modify. They had ratios for second and third grade that seemed really unrealistic. This was theoretically kind of here's the goal you get toward, which is why all day kindergarten's in there. But I would be happy as an author's amendment to make it 12 hours. I honestly do believe in most cases, though, kids are
parents are looking for all-day settings for most of their kids. And so if in this kind of a setting, what we might see is wraparound. But, of course, I think 12 is just fine. So, Mr. Chair, on line 2.11, I would, as an author's amendment, move from 16 down to 12. And I appreciate you being willing to do 15, but I think 12 is just fine.
Senator Clark incorporates that into her amendment. Senator Hand, I haven't forgotten of Senator Terezre, but I think we'll deal with this amendment and then come back to you, or did you want us to come back?
No, I think that would be the best thing to do.
All right, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just am reading the language on page 2, lines 2.3 to 2.6. That language does not make any sense to me. If someone can read it and explain it, I'd be happy to know that. I think there's some words missing or something missing from that that needs it. And I also have a question about what integrated education model means, if that is defined somewhere.
Senator Clark.
We might want to have Ms. Carlson from MD come up because this is where the language originally came from, and we might need to, if there's some additional work. The thought, though, is there are already some places in the state but around the country that integrated does not mean what it means from a diversity standpoint. What it means is that we've got children from 3 or 4 years through third grade, and that we are aligning the curricula. I know that you've talked and been concerned about fade-out effect, and that's partially because curricula is not realigned in kindergarten, first, second grade. It also means when I think about the work that Senator Saltzman and Senator Olson have done on reading and pre-literacy, that we would have some of those things that would be a continuum. So what it really is, more is that you are connecting what's going on. And if you have an issue with that word, we could certainly modify it, but I believe that's what the intent.
Mr. Chair and Senator Clark, and Senator Hand, if you just on line 2.4 after May, insert A, and then on line 2.5, strike is established, or delete is established. And if you incorporate that, that would.
So, Mr. Chairman and
Senator Hand,
Dr. McQuaid, you insert the word A after May?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, and Senator Hand, after establish, insert A.
I think if we
Roland?
Rid of the is established on 2.5, that's all we need to do, because establish is now in there twice.
Right.
So if we would strike is established.
Yes, that works.
Okay, Senator Roebling.
You still need the A, though.
I don't think you do.
Oh, we still need the A.
Dr. McQuay, just repeat what you.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like it is the will of the committee to on 2.4 strike may establish.
No.
2.5.
Is established.
Okay, Mr. Chair, on 2.4 after establish, insert A. And on 2.5, strike is established.
On that, Senator Hand?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I personally would be more comfortable when we use a term like this in a particular section of law, integrated education model. I think we should define it. Now, Senator Clark has described what she intends by that, but if that's not anywhere in statute as a defined term, we ought to have some language that says what this means. I just think that it's an unusual term. We haven't seen that. At least I haven't seen it in laws. And I think we should define it.
Senator Clark, did you make that a motion to include those changes in your amendment?
Yes.
Senator Clark incorporates those changes in the amendment. Carlson?
Mr. Chair and members, actually, the requirements define what that modifier would be. So I think it'd be fine to take out the word integrated to not have confusion there. And the requirements talk to teachers and principals working across a continuum, and that's the idea.
Okay. Is that...
Mr. Chairman, if that's acceptable, that I would move that we delete integrated then and use the...
You just put that into my amendment. That was going to be my suggestion. It doesn't sound like it adds anything.
Mr. Chair and members, just for clarification, on line 2.5, strike integrated.
Okay.
Senator Clark incorporates that. Further discussion. If not, Mr. No.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I will note that there was some conversation at the beginning of this amendment about costs. I think the chair was concerned about some of the costs associated with the Office of Early Learning. And while we do not yet have a completed fiscal note, it does appear that some of the preliminary work is implying a cost of $580,000 in fiscal 10, dropping to $321,000 in 11 and into the out years. Most of these costs are associated with, I think, about three FTEs, some additional startup costs. So there is a cost with this provision, which we would need to carry, and it would take the bill out of balance.
And
Senator Clark.
I believe that Senator Stumpf had an idea. Our thought and what had happened last year was ultimately we got the fiscal note to one position. We're believing this should only be existing staff, especially in these tight times, and we probably have at least one deputy, a level commissioner that could probably be the person. So I think we need to work on getting that fiscal note down. Senator Roebling, you might agree with that.
But Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I concur with Senator Clark, and I wondered if it might not even work to put in the language using existing personnel and taking advantage of existing space or available space.
Senator Clark is nodding approvingly.
We tried to figure out before where we could put something like that.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I'm slow catching up with everything here, but when on Senator Hand's point and his concern about integrated, on page 2, line 5, may I suggest that you take out the whole expression that offers an integrated education model? Because the sentence says that these entities may establish a pre-kindergarten through third grade educational program to serve children 3 years old through grade 3, and the next subdivision says program requirements. So you have your laundry list of things, whether you agree with them all or not, but that's it, and I think you could get that confusing language out of there.
Senator Clark.
Yes, I think actually if we deleted offers an integrated education model
that
is established to, and then put an S at the end of serves, then it would just say an educational program that serves children 3 years old through
okay.
grade.
Okay.
Would that work, Senator Olson?
It's a friendly amendment incorporated by the author in the A24 as amended repeatedly. Further discussion. Senator Stump.
Mr. Chair, to address the fiscal cost, because we do have to carry a cost after that preliminary fiscal note came out, there is an amendment. It's the A27 amendment. And I think the we do need to make a correction here. Because of the fiscal note costs are higher than the 5%. So, Mr. Nauman, I'm not sure what the correct
Well, Mr. Chairman,
is.
This establishes a rider on the appropriation for the allowances, which allows, under the language, up to 5% of the annual appropriation is for the administration of the Office of Early Learning. So basically allows the agency to subtract some amount of cost associated with the administration. Currently, it's at 5%, and I stress that the preliminary note is preliminary, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lecture from the Department of Finance about speaking directly to these numbers. But that said, I think it's important for this bill to be balanced as it comes out of here. So I would suggest that if you adjusted the 5 to 10, then you would certainly be in balance.
And Mr. Chair, it is up to, so it doesn't presume that 10%, but up to. This allows us to proceed to the full finance committee with being in balance. To offer that. Or maybe you want
to. Mr. Chair, I would be happy to take it as an author's amendment. I think some of us are a little concerned that 10 might be a little hefty for what we think they need to do, but I think in the just to keep us moving, that's okay, but we'll have to keep working with the department.
Senator Clark accepts the A27 as an author's amendment. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can you do that at this level, or should I'd be happy to offer the amendment to her amendment?
It's been incorporated, Senator Olson.
You can incorporate all these?
At the 10%.
This is at 10%?
Yeah.
Senator Stumpf, will we take further public testimony at this point? We did hear from Dr. Ephraim before.
We are limited till 11:30.
Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Dr. Ephraim,
Thank you, sir.
For the record. And
I'm Dr. Karen Ephraim with EdWatch. I'm not here to talk about the theoretical issues with the bill, but some practical things that need to be I hope considered. We appreciate Senator Clark's willingness to take out the word "all." That's a huge piece for us.
And Dr. Ephraim, respectfully, I'm going to ask if you could focus
very quickly,
for about 2 minutes.
Very quickly.
On the amendment.
On lines 1.18 through 1.20, it talks about working with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. This is a private organization that refused state money because they did not want to have open meeting laws, and EdWatch strenuously objects to them being put in state law to help set early childhood policy for the entire state. That's one issue. And then on line 123, about the data collection system, there is already a significant amount of data collected on children in this state, and at least I would hope that there would be some lip service to Chapter 13 of statute regarding data privacy and consent. And then on about the pre-K to grade 3, subdivision 2, lines 2.7 through 2.10 is very confusing because on the one hand it's titled program requirements, but the last sentence says the program may strive to include the following. So we don't know whether it's required, all these things are required, several of which we object to, or whether it is an option. And specifically, we object to line 2.13, 2.14 and 1.5, item 8, and item 9. So if those are not requirements but options, they can be discussed. But if they are requirements, we have grave concerns.
Thank you, Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you very
much. Senator Clark will continue to work with others interested in this work in progress.
Actually, I think of that, Mr. Chair, the one on 2.7 about requirements. And again, I think it was more about components. I think we can just delete the word requirements. That's fine.
But, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Clark, is that your intent then?
Yes.
Okay, and that will be incorporated in the author's amendment. Senator Clark has the.
That you also had some qualifying language on the data collection on lines 1.23, 1.24, and maybe Mr. Kurz can help us with that because I thought that was good language.
Yes, and Senator Clark, members, I suggested that at line 1.23 that we acknowledge the state's longitudinal data system that is collecting information now. And council has a suggested language.
Mr. Chair, members,
The recommendation would be on page 1, line 23, after system, insert and participate in the state's longitudinal data collection program.
And Mr. Chair, I recognize that that probably doesn't address Dr. Ephraim's comment, but these are things that we are doing. We are trying to figure out how we are moving forward and that we know where our kids are at. Parents do not have to have their children in places that they don't want to do this. And we are currently already have relationships with the Early Learning Foundation. They are the ones that are structurally doing the evaluation and working with the Department of Human Services and education on this. That's why that's in there.
Senator Olson, followed by Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, on that line 2.7, the first sentence does make a requirement, but I don't think it's necessary. It just repeats what you're saying, that a district may establish a program that serves these same ages. And you're saying if they do, then they must. I think they may establish it. So if you eliminated that first, if you change it to program components, eliminate the first sentence, and then say the program may strive to include the following, I think it would.
Senator Olson, I think that makes it just perfect, or it's better than it was. Okay.
Thank you, Senator Olson. The bill improves. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to go on record for the commitment to data privacy that was addressed, that it is certainly not any of our intent who have been working on this to allow data to be shared inappropriately, that we do respect the importance of data privacy.
Senator Clark has incorporated a number of items, and just for the record, so that where she has a accepted that, that'll be included in the draft.
Mr. Chair, if I could repeat
Dr. McCoy.
Senator Olson's motion, it would be to reinstate requirements.
No. Components. Program components.
On page 2, after on line 7, after program, insert components. And then strike on that same line, if a pre-kindergarten through third grade program, and then strike lines 8 and 9.
And also incorporated along the discussion was the reference to the state's longitudinal data council has. Further discussion on the 24 amendment as amended? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A13 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, before you move, I think I wanted to address a couple of amendments that were connected to this section, and I thought I was going to be given that opportunity.
Mr. Chair, voted on the
amendments. Okay. Senator, who voted on the prevailing
side? I'll move to reconsider, Mr. Chair, to entertain additional discussion.
Senator Wieger moves to reconsider the A24 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Senator. I really didn't want to reconsider. I just had a couple of amendments that are connected to it, but I don't know. I don't think that's here or there. That's okay. First of all, Mr. Chairman and members, this is language that we talked about, but it is not reflected in the language that was introduced in this bill. And really, the language that is now in this bill is a little bit different, so it's hard for me to go back and explain really how we incorporated the language into the previous version, which I have with me if you want to see it. So that
Senator Therese Ray, just to clarify the record, are we talking about the amendment, the A24 amendment?
Some of it. Part of it is. It's just that what happened is this, Senator. We had in the version that we passed in our previous committee, this bill was divided in was addressed in two articles, Article 5 and Article 6. Article 5 addressed some practice issues, and Article 6 addressed the office. Now, all of it is in Article 6. So that's what is confusing. So to give you an example, in the amendment that you just adopted in the language, you have, this is A17, you have one portion of the language that I amended last time, and that is in line 125. This was in Article 5, and it talks about teachers' competence. Now, I have fixed it because I have had opportunity to think about this, so I have the amendment now clear if you would like to entertain it. So in the previous language, what you had, and it is no longer in this bill,
Senator Therese Ray, we need to clarify exactly what the committee has before it. We currently have before us the A24 amendment. So we either have to have an amendment to the A24 amendment or we have to take action on the A24 amendment without. So
that's correct, Mr. Chairman. That's why I didn't want to reconsider. I just wanted to explain.
If there may have been a mistake, but I'm not aware of it, the only change that was made to the Office of Early Learning as we adopted in committee was the word oversee instead of coordinate and facilitate, because somehow that didn't get into the amendment. But otherwise, the language, my understanding is the way we adopted it. If you want to modify it, that's fine. But if something else was adopted, it was accidentally dropped. So if we need to fix it, let's fix it.
Senator Therese Ray.
Mr. Chairman, the best thing will be just to deal with the amendment passed, and then I will go to the amendments. It's the easiest way to do it.
Okay. On the A24 amendment that we have before us, as amended, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Therese Ray.
So now let me just deal with the amendments. The first one is on page, I'm sorry, Senator Olson, the staff put together an amendment for you, and I believe it is the A14 amendment, but this amendment is incorrect. So I have to do a verbal amendment because I think the staff attempted to help me with this, but
Senator,
since the language is different.
Senator Therese Ray, is the A24 amendment?
No, it's
or
A14 amendment.
A14.
You don't have it in front of you. I was given the
A14
amendment that staff
prepared. Let's hand out the A14 amendment.
But this is incorrect, yes. Because this bill is so different.
Members, I would like to, we have some people here who can't come back that would like to testify on something. So if we can get work our way through this relatively quickly, that would be good.
Mr. Chairman, I believe now you have the amendment. So let me explain the amendment that was prepared by the staff and why I think that I would not get your support on this amendment. This amendment on page 141, line 24, that portion is correct because it really talks about a practice. So to incorporate, that portion of the amendment is correct. Right after comprehensive, incorporate culturally relevant. That's good. The second part, which is the same page, line 27, after comprehensive, incorporate culturally relevant, I believe that you're not going to accept that, although I would love it if you do. The reason is, and I think this speaks to Senator Roblin's concern, which I think is very legitimate, which is that really creating a comprehensive program that is culturally competent is very expensive. So I hope that we work towards that goal, but I think it will be very difficult and you will have a fiscal note that is too big. One thing is to talk about a culturally relevant practice. So let's talk about flashcards, for instance, that you have an apple pie that a kid that is an immigrant kid. I didn't have an apple pie until I came to this country, so I didn't recognize an apple pie until I was 21. But in all of your flashcards, like when you're assessing kindergartners,
do you like apple pie now?
I know apple pie now. Most of the flashcards that you have for kindergartners in this country, when you ask a kindergartner to recognize an image, you have apple pie, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, macaroni and cheese. I never had that food when I was growing up. So when you talk about cultural competent practice, that's one practice. And I hope, you know, we're moving and we've changed a lot. And Dr. Mary McAvoy took all of those cards and put, you know, a tree that everybody would recognize or a wheel, objects like that. So that's that. The amendment, the line 24 is a good amendment because it's about practice. The other one is about programming, and I think it's too expensive. I hope we could do it one day in this country, but I don't think we. So the amendment that I proposed originally was line 24, and then this is where it is confusing because in your bill on page 142, I propose that we amend section 7, subdivision 10, which no longer exists because it's not in the bill. Okay? Right. And my intent was to add language that talk about cultural competency for teachers. See, that's not programming, it's cultural competent teacher. So in that, I can no longer address that because that section is not there. So now I have to address it in the amended language.
So,
and in the amended language will be line 125 of the A17 amendment.
Senator Terrazzari, let's deal with the A14 amendment.
So I need to amend that amendment to make it relevant to these.
You don't.
Mr. Chair, Dr. McQuay, Torres-Ray, I think that what you mean to incorporate on the A14 amendment is delete line 1.4.
Right. You just take that line off.
And then move that.
And move that one. Yes. Okay, that will be good. We can do that. And then I move to the next one, and I will do it orally.
On the A4 amendment as amended.
A14
amendment. I apologize. On that amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oppose the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Terrazzari.
Mr. Chairman, and so the second piece to address section, which I believe continues to be section 7. So the language that we have now said have teachers knowledgeable.
Members, just to get everybody on the same page, it's page 142, section 7.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
And that is no longer in the bill.
Right. It's up for number 10.
Amendment.
3.22 to 3.23 is what replaced that, and that's where you would insert it, I believe.
Correct. Correct, Mr. Senator Clark. So the amendment is have teachers. The amendment to that line will be have teachers knowledgeable in early childhood curriculum content, cultural competency, comma, assessment. So the word that I'm introducing, the words, is cultural competency, comma, into that amended language.
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, I think
Dr. McQuay.
For someone on the prevailing side of the A17 amendment, which was the second amendment the committee adopted, to reconsider that vote, and then we can amend that amendment, and you can take the vote.
Senator Scogin moves the reconsideration of the A17 amendment, which was adopted. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank
now,
you.
The amendment that Senator Terrazzari is offering to that amendment on line 1.25 after the comma at the end of the line, insert
cultural competency.
Comma. And Senator Rummel, would you like to incorporate that into your amendment?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Rummel incorporates that into her amendment. On the A17 amendment, any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Dahl.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
The same area?
I move the A13 amendment.
Well, he's passing that on.
No, we have to reconsider. Senator Dahl, hand out the A13 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While you're receiving it, this is deleting, and I know we had a good discussion on this, the Alternative Teacher Preparation Program and Resident Teacher License for Qualified Non-Traditional Candidates. And I brought up some of the same questions when we had that discussion. I did vote against that amendment previous, or that addition previous. And there's a couple things here. We've been all session talking about teacher quality, and I believe there are plenty of qualified teachers coming out of the education programs through our universities and colleges. I also worry about the number of applicants that will now be squeezed by additional non-traditional candidates trying to enter the field, especially in lieu of possible layoffs due to budget cuts. But I believe the current pool of candidates is more than qualified and highly qualified to meet the needs of schools right now. Well, I think the intentions of this piece of the bill are admirable. I do have some concerns, and I've learned of some of those concerns recently. I do have a teacher from St. Paul, I believe, that would like to just briefly talk about how this part of the bill might affect their particular employment.
Okay, this, I believe, was actually some of the governors in the governor's no, it wasn't. Oh, Senator
Mr. Bono. Chair, this is the not the proposal by the governor. This is the proposal that bill that I carried that allowed Teach for America the ability, those kids, to come into our schools and then be eligible for licensure following their work.
Okay. If you can give your name for the record, please.
Roy Magnuson, St. Paul Como Park Senior High.
Peter Grabner, Como Park Senior High School as well.
Okay. Please, just very shortly.
I'll be brief. We've been here since the start of the day, so I know how long your day has been, and we'll get to leave. This is kind of, after watching a number of years of intended consequences, I'm starting to see some unintended consequences from the sense that making licensure easier is always a universal good. What ends up happening is, and Peter will speak to some specifics, but you start having this sense that you can just sort of make a change, and whether you are looking for a career change or whether you're not getting a job, all of a sudden, well, I could be a teacher. And that's wonderful, except being a teacher actually is hard work. And some of the things that the teacher schools are doing now, pushed by changes at the legislature, are forcing people who want to be teachers to do significantly more before they come into the schools. A student-teacher experience is actually an experience where students who want to be teachers learn what they're getting into. And the intent of consistently making alternative licensure easier at first glance seems to be neutral, but actually you start ending up excluding people who want to be career track teachers, and you start making what I'm afraid of is the McDonald'sization of education, where in McDonald's they know there's always another 17-year-old ready to come along and be an entry-level employee. Teach for America, to some degree, is that model, where there is always going to be another 17-year-old coming along waiting to be the employee. Do better, as you have talked all this morning, at increasing teacher preparation. Do better at supporting teachers when they come in. Do better, as Senator Torres Ray said, about making sure that we are sensitive to cultural competency, but don't shortcut it. And we have reached the point now where the desire to make alternative licensure easier, I believe we are shortcutting, and what's going to happen is going to be a negative.
Okay. Thank you. If you can give your name for the record, please.
Peter Grebner. And I just wanted to speak about some of the unintended consequences of this bill. I've had some very highly qualified student teachers the past several years. I teach chemistry, and I'm seeing people that have wanted to be teachers for a period of time, have put their own money, thousands of dollars into their training and their education, have come in to be student teachers, and I now see that they're not eligible to be part of alternative teaching programs, and they're actually being leapfrogged over for hiring. And so I have student teachers that I would hire at a minute, but these people are not going to be able to get jobs because of other people who have decided to take a shortcut into becoming teachers that don't have the training, aren't prepared to be in the classroom. And I think that we're seeing some of the consequences of that this year. And I just think that that's kind of a sad event.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chair, sir, are you saying that some of the Teach for America teachers have been hired, students have been hired, program participants have been hired in place of student teachers in your school?
It's not,
Mr. Grevner.
It's not Teach for America.
Yeah, it's not actually Teach for America. I think that they may be involved in the Fellows Program in St. Paul.
New Teacher Project.
What's that? The New Teacher Project. That's what it is.
Mr.
Sorry,
Chair, Senator Olson. There's two programs.
So, similar program.
Yeah, there are besides the alternative path that I set forward in that bill, right now would allow the Teach for America program. It would also allow for this St. Paul Fellows program. And in addition, it has a provision for mid-career professionals. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Alschweiger, and then if there's some others on the other side that want to testify, we have to recess at 11:30. So. Ms. Alschweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota. I want to make it very clear that Education Minnesota holds very high standards for teachers, and licensing is one of the most important issues that we are concerned about. I want to review what this bill does, because I think that there was a fairly quick discussion over the bill in the last hearing. But we would say, first of all, it should not be easy to become a teacher, as Mr. Magnuson stated. This bill would allow, on page 49, I'm specifically getting to 49.10, it would allow a nonprofit corporation to prepare teachers to be licensed, prepare college graduates to be licensed. There's another mid-career, as Senator Bonov stated, that we also have some concerns about. There isn't any higher ed connection necessarily to the degree that it should be for the nonprofit. If you go down to lines 49.18, there are some minimal requirements for the candidates, but they simply need to have a college degree and a 3.0 grade point. It does not say that it has to even be in their content area. On line 49.29, the requirement that they have is to have a minimum of 200 instructional hours, intensive preparation. This is basically 2.5 weeks, as compared to the 4 years that a graduate would have with the major in teacher education. Going to the next page, on page 50, 50.4, there is peer coaching. In the district, this so-called teacher would be assigned a mentor, and there isn't any discussion about who pays for this peer coaching or who pays for this mentorship. On lines 50.6 through 50.9, there isn't any discussion about the quality of the mentor, what qualifications they have, what kind of training. And again, there's supposed to be staff development, but in this bill, the staff development requirements are deleted. On 50.17, it says that the Board of Teaching must permit licensure candidates to demonstrate licensure competencies in school-based settings and through other non-traditional licensure pathways. What would that be? We certainly are not clear. Once the teacher, the so-called teacher, has been placed after this 200 hours of instruction and taking a couple of tests, they are put in with kids. These people are not prepared to be teaching kids. And the resident mentor then makes a decision about whether this person should be licensed by the Board of Teaching or not. Right now, the Board of Teaching makes those decisions, but we are giving this to an independent mentor to decide whether or not that person is qualified. The Board of Teaching criteria is rigorous. It should be. It should not be easy to be a teacher. But now, if I am a fourth grade teacher and I am mentoring a person who's come in through Teach for America, I get to decide, is that person, should that person be licensed? When I send in a recommendation to the Board of Teaching, that Board of Teaching must accept that recommendation. On page, I guess that covers most of the pieces in the bill. But I want you to think about, some of you may have sons or daughters who went through 4 years of college and said, you know, when they were in third grade, they decided, I wanted to be a teacher. And they go through the whole certification process, probably have a significant debt. And what has happened in the real-life situation now, which is why we have these St. Paul teachers here, is that contracts are being signed with a new teacher project or Teach for America to place a certain number of these candidates into the classrooms. And so we have probationary teachers that are there, and in some of these situations, some of these contracts that are written, they don't displace probationary teachers. But there is nothing in this bill that prohibits them from laying off a probationary teacher. What has happened, as Mr. Grubner was stating, is that there have been teachers that went through a very successful student teaching experience at a St. Paul school, or it could in any other school in the state. And if it's your son or daughter then who is wants to be hired, and they have an opening in the math department, let's say, and there have been situations where a supervising teacher says, we want this person, and an administrator that says that they want this person, but they can't because they have a contract with the Teach for America or the New Teacher Project. There is nothing here that prohibits that from happening. So if you are cutting budgets in Minneapolis or St. Paul or Duluth or Bagley, wherever it is, and Teach for America has a contract with the school district, and there's nothing related to probationary teachers, probationary teachers are in place for 3 years, and then they can go to continuing contract status. But if a contract is signed with the district to say that they're going to place X number of teachers in these positions, those probationary teachers will lose their job. These are.
I think we need to have some of the testimony on the other side, and then we'll try to, Matt Kramer and Jim Grathwall, if they would come up, and then Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, and I want to make sure we do give those testifiers a chance, so I won't speak too long, but I do want to point to some of the myths. I think that, you know, it should be noted that the superintendent of Minneapolis, the superintendent of St. Paul, the mayors of both cities, they have said they want this program because this program is making a difference all across the country. These kids are the best and brightest kids in the colleges across this country. That's who gets selected. I asked a young woman yesterday, did she know of Teach for America? She said, yes. I said, is that something you're interested in? She said, oh, it's so competitive. I mean, this really taps into what we've been saying for years, which is how can we make sure to get our very best students and have the kind of status associated with teaching that's associated with the other professions. And so that's why I carry the legislation. That's why I applaud the efforts by the various other people here today to open this door for our school districts.
Okay. Mr. Kramer, you want to give your name for the record? And
My name is Matthew Kramer, and I'm the president of Teach for America. I'll just say briefly, Teach for America holds extremely high standards for who gets into the program. About one out of every eight applicants gets in, despite the applicant pool being 10% of the people in almost every major college in the country. We have extremely high standards for training. It's intensive. It's very focused on practice. And we have large investments in training, only 10% of which come from the districts, 90% of which we raise from other sources to match these public funds. And principals are extremely happy with Teach for America recruits. 95% of principals say that Teach for America recruits are at least as good as other teachers, and two-thirds say they're better than other teachers when they're hired. So I think that the facts of the matter are that these are, you know, very good people we're bringing in, and I think you should feel confident in that.
Mr. Grathwell.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to ask you to defer to Ms. Doherty.
Quickly.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I just want to clear up just some confusion related to this. The new teacher fellows in St. Paul are only filling vacancies where we have current teacher variances with the Board of Teaching right now. We have 11 for bilingual, 56 for special ed, 14 for math, and 11 for science. So the reason that we chose the new teacher program was because we were trying to fill licensed areas where we had no trained teachers that we could recruit. And we have an amazing recruitment program at St. Paul where we led. You know what I mean? So it's not that this is the only recruitment tool that we use. I also want to be clear that the teacher fellows are part of our bargaining unit. They are part of they are under the same tenure act that every one of our probationary teachers are. If they get laid off, they get laid off in the same order as any other teacher, and they're treated as such under the system. Because they are filling hard to these areas, and because these are the areas we are constantly recruiting, they tend to get laid off less than other teachers. But because of the license that they are holding or the area that they are pursuing their license. And finally, all of these candidates are at Hamline. They are pursuing a higher education, and they will have a license degree at the end of the day.
Mr. Grathwell.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Grathwell with Minneapolis Public Schools. We strongly support the provision in the bill. We oppose the amendment. We have a memorandum of understanding with our local bargaining unit that these Teach for America or these new alternative licensed teachers would not supplant or replace existing bargaining unit members. Thank you very much.
Okay. As we... I'd like to ask Mr. Harris and Ms. Smith to offer their testimony, too, and then I think we'll have to recess. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. Shep Harris on behalf of the Board of Teaching. Basically, just to repeat what's been said in previous testimony on this bill, the Board of Teaching does support this. The current alternative licensing process is a little complicated, and that this would make it more clean and more streamlined, but and especially in the sense that it allows the board to create a process that would meet all current needs and future needs. Thank you. I'm sorry. My apologies. We support the Senator Bonhoff's language. We oppose the amendment.
Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and on behalf of the entire business community, including Jim Bartholomew with the Business Partnership, we would like to oppose this amendment and thank Senator Bonhoff for the language in this bill.
Thank you. Do any members have a question on this? Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'm getting a lot of good guidance from everyone in my city who disagrees with each other. They're both, all sides of it have been well represented today by St. Paul. My question is, Ms. Gilbert talked about St. Paul and how, and we also heard about Minneapolis, how it's very narrowly interpreted and negotiated so that it's only for teachers that can't be, you know, spots that can't be filled by regular licensed teachers. Do they use this program and that they are part of the union and have the same seniority rights as everyone else, you know, to be bumped? If that's one approach, but this bill, it seems to me, goes way beyond that, those restrictions. So I'm being, you know, Senator Bonhoff, I think this, why don't you limit this to places where you can't find regular teachers We're being asked to vote on something that's much broader than what is being described by my district.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, St. Paul was accurate in how they are talking about that program. This bill isn't about that. This bill really is about allowing some tools to be available in the Teach for America is strictly about going into underserved areas where we have not had success, just like the charter school movement allows for that and says this is a proven method where these kids are highly trained to come into those areas and make a difference. And so I don't accept, they don't, that those students, they're paid a stipend, they're not paid for, you know, that it's very different than being part of the union and all that. And so, so you know, if you, when your kids are at college age, I bet they're going to want to be in Teach for America, but she's doubting. Anyways, Senator Anderson, I don't support the Dahl Amendment.
Okay. On Senator Dahl's amendment, which is the A13 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Members, we are going to recess until...
Recess.
Senator Anderson.
Recess.
We're going to recess... until 5:30 in room 112.
Playground.
We'll all go out on the steps of the Capitol. Committee is reset. Please put your, if you would, please put your papers inside your folder.